This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hands up if hot weather turns you into a completely different person, sleeping badly, feeling foggy, cranky, exhausted, and that's before the day's even started. But what's actually happening inside our bodies when the temperature rises? And why do some of us cope fine while others just really struggle? Joining us on Joy Drive is Associate Professor Teresa Larkin from the University of Wollongong. Teresa, thanks for joining us again on Drive.
Thanks for having me back. Nice to chat to you as well this time, Colin.
Yeah, looking forward to having our chat. Now, let's start with the basics. We often hear that normal body temperature is 37 degrees. Why does our body work so hard to keep it steady? And what actually happens if it rises too much?
Yeah, so we, as being warm-blooded mammals, we have to maintain our body temperature ourselves, so we can't allow the environment to affect that. And so everything that's going on inside us, all of the chemical reactions, all of the metabolic processes, all of the enzymes, which are chemicals that really help to make the chemical reactions happen, they are all really temperature dependent. So even actually our immune functions, so all of the cells of our immune system, they operate optimally at 37 degrees. And then the functions of our brain and all of our organs and keeping everything at that level so we don't lose too much water or gain too much water, you know, all of those things are really temperature dependent. So we do have mechanisms, like you say, to make sure that we ideally stick to around that 37 degrees despite what the air temperature is around us or the temperature around us. And I suppose an analogy is when you think about, you know, a computer running, the computer needs to run at a certain temperature so that all those little chips and processors work. And if it's too hot, we will hear that fan come on automatically. So that's kind of like the thermoregulation of the computer is kind of the equivalent to us. So yeah, we have processes to ensure that we don't go too much above 37 degrees and then also not too much below.
And when it does get too hot, how does our body actually regulate temperature? What are the main ways it sort of is trying to keep us cool without us even thinking about it?
Yeah, and do you know what's interesting, and obviously this is really related to climate change, is that extreme heat has the biggest impact on hospitalizations and deaths out of all weather-related admissions. So people might think it's the cold or, you know, other kind of things or frostbite or something, but it's actually extreme heat. So our body does have processes. So the way that our body normally responds to high temperatures is by increasing blood flow to the skin. And the biggest one is sweating. So that is without a doubt our main regulatory response. It's actually why when we evolved, we lost a lot of our body hair because we needed to make room in our skin for the sweat glands. So yeah, sweating, because when water leaves our body, it literally takes heat with it because the processes in our skin to change water to evaporation takes energy. And so that removes some heat from our body and cools us down. So that's sweating is called evaporative heat loss. And then also we can see, you know, in the heat, I know me especially, I get those swollen veins on the back of my hands, you know, on my arms, in your feet, people notice it. That's really showing you that you've got this increased blood flow to the skin so that we can also have heat move across the skin that way. And so, yeah, we can see that as well in swollen hands and feet. One of the things that can cause is low blood pressure because more blood is going out to the periphery and less is central. But the biggest key to all of that is that increasing blood flow to the skin and sweating, they're both linked to losing fluid. So when it's hot, the biggest thing we need to do to keep up our processes at optimal function is to increase our water intake.
Yeah, we keep on sort of hearing about when you were talking about blood vessels rising at the top and you sort of notice them more. I thought it had to do a combination of obviously the heat, but also your body's trying to regulate the heat, but also to do with just, I suppose, is there something to do with age and heat that the older you get, your body reacts to it in a different way? Or is that sort of a myth that somehow needs to be dispelled now and forever?
No, that's actually true. So it's like with so many things, it's the opposite ends of the spectrum or both ends of the spectrum. So people who are most at risk in the heat, so yeah, the elderly definitely. And that's because they can't easily cool down because as we age, we just have less efficient responses. So there might be damage to the way that the nerves pick up that the person is hot, for example, or damage to the nerves that respond. There's also reduced sweat gland activity. You know, a lot of things become a little bit drier as we age, and so the sweat glands aren't working as well. So definitely the elderly are at risk. Babies as well, because they actually haven't developed their responses. So it's really important that babies are kept cool and that they're kept hydrated. But then also anyone who's pregnant or breastfeeding, you know, because of their higher needs for fluids, but also anyone who's exercising or working in the sun, these people are really at risk of dehydration and heat exhaustion, which is when the body temperature goes too high. And so really in those situations, like, people should be drinking a glass of water every 20 minutes or having 2 to 3 litres of water a day. So the biggest thing we can do in terms of helping our sweating is to increase our fluids, but we can also do other things to help keep us cool. Like, literally, you know, things, it's interesting when we hear about all the things that different people do, you know, is that we can use a fan.
Yep.
So the good old fashioned fan, the sound of my childhood summer and so many's, I'm sure.
Yes.
That actually blows off the hot air that's leaving your body.
Wow.
So as the heat leaves through your skin, there's a layer right next to your skin that's quite hot then, essentially. And so the fan blows that warm air away and replaces it with cooler air. So that's why, even, you know, I actually experienced this yesterday here in Wollongong. You know, we went for a swim. It was really nice. We got out and there was a breeze, and straight away we were really cold. So it's kind of the same premise of wind chill making you colder. And then obviously things like, you know, putting your feet or hands in cold water or using ice packs, anything like that that literally put coldness on your skin means that that's a quicker way for heat to also pass across.
We're chatting with Associate Professor Teresa Larkin, Associate of Medical Sciences at the University of Wollongong, about how our bodies handle the heat and what we can do to stay cool. Now, it's interesting you mentioned about fans. We got a few messages in. I did a shout out to people about how does heat affect you and what you do to cope. We got quite a few messages in. A portable fan is my best friend, keeps me alive during the afternoon heat. That's from Priya in Oakley. There's another one from Al in Collingwood. Fans on all night, windows open, and I still wake up exhausted. I suppose you can't do much about that. Another opportunity, another sort of message here that came in, says cold showers are my lifesaver, even if I sweat again 5 minutes later. So it's about cooling your body and somehow regulating that sort of sweat in a way that sort of makes you feel better, because you mentioned hydration. I was going to talk to you about hydration. Let's go back to that one where you drink water. What about things that I've heard a lot about too, like electrolytes or other cooling techniques? How important are they, or are they just sort of more just a glorified way of sort of having water? Because we hear about the salts somehow being sweated out of our body. Sometimes we need to replace them, especially if we're excessively sweating. Is that electrolytes helps with that or not?
Yes, that is absolutely true. And the reason is that when you sweat and water leaves the body, sodium or salts, they also leave the body, but our sweat glands reabsorb that sodium or the salts back in. So the net loss is generally just water, but water leaving. So that's what we want. And then that's how we can easily replace that with just pure water. That's totally fine. When we overload our sweating capacity, and so that's really then, say, in the cases of exercising or working in the sun and you're just sweating like crazy, you know, you're not really, your body's at the limits of maintaining that body temperature, then that overpowers the ability of the sweat glands to retain the salts. And so in those instances, it is true that ingesting the salt, you know, whether it's through one of those electrolyte drinks or whatever, that absolutely is important. So not everyone needs it if they're just sweating a little bit and they may able to keep their temperature under control. But I guess the other thing that people need to remember is that, and this is the season, you know, drinking coffee, tea or alcohol, obviously they make you more dehydrated. So it's the motion of drinking and the motion of ingesting a fluid, but you really then should be matching each of those with a glass of water, just to make sure that your balance isn't going towards the dehydration side of things.
Gotcha. You mentioned exercise. What about exercising when it's hot? Obviously, using your senses about what you should do safely is primary focus, but what are you suggesting? People sort of obviously keep hydrated, maybe slow down rather than sort of go quick pace if they're out exercising the heat?
Yeah, absolutely. If people are outside, especially in the sun, you know, just to really not overexert themselves, drink more water. One really good thing as well is to keep the hands and the feet and the neck uncovered, because that's where we have the highest sweat rates during exercise. So that's why, you know, obviously a lot of people might exercise in a tank top, for example. So in the heat, you know, to keep those areas uncovered, but obviously if you're in the sun to still use sunscreen, that's a really good way. And then ice packs around the neck. But yeah, absolutely. If someone's exercising a lot in the sun, the biggest thing is to stay hydrated. And I guess the other thing is to really note the importance of looking out for heat exhaustion and heat stroke. So if the body can't get rid of the extra heat and the body temperature is higher than, say, 38 degrees, that's when you can develop heat exhaustion. So someone might have a headache or feel dizzy or nauseous. But if someone's body temperature goes above 40 degrees, that's when someone can develop heat stroke, and they might be confused or faint. And that really requires medical attention, because you can have damage to the nerves and the organs and the muscles. So it is something that can happen in Australia. And so I guess it's important just to make sure that people are not doing too much in the middle of the day in the sun, not exercising crazy, keeping up the hydration and then the electrolytes if they're really oversweating. But for most of us, it's all about, fluids, feet up, because your feet can get swollen. Fan on. The fan, as the listener said, the fan is a great thing.
I get you. And we've just got another question popping. We're just about to run out of time, Teresa. This one is, does heat leave our body from our head? Should we take hats off inside?
Oh, that's a very good question. Yes, that's a great idea to do that. And one thing that I remember someone telling me once that they did is to put water on their cap. So that would be a great way to increase the heat loss across your head. But yeah, taking your cap off inside is a great idea.
Thanks, Teresa.
So hats off is how we can finish that.
How apt is that, Teresa?
Perfect.
Thank you so much. I mean, especially as I sort of said, literally, it's right now we need to know about this stuff, because unlike where you are, Melbourne is only just starting to heat up, and it's just taken a good month before that's happening. So, but again, it's unpredictable, as you know. From one day, it'll go from 30 odd, and then it'll hit 15. But that's what we love about Melbourne, anyway, I suppose.
You're coping in a heat wave is very transient, isn't it? It comes and goes. But when it's there, it's there.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, look, as Sue says, thank you so much for joining us again on Joy Drive.
No worries. Thank you.
Have a happy new year. We look forward to having you again in 2026. Look after yourself. And, more interesting conversations coming our way for next year from you.
Absolutely. Happy New Year to everyone as well, and chat to you next year.
Thanks, Teresa. That was Teresa Larkin, Associate Professor of Medical Sciences at the University of Wollongong.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.